Hello and welcome to a very special podcast series, Unusual Suspects. I'm your host, Gaurav Chaudhary. This is a series about unraveling stories of entrepreneurs, investors, and businesses that are disruptors, yet not in your face. Their disruptions have consistently delivered on the purpose and the mission they've embarked on. Their values are as strong as the mission. While they're ruthless in pursuing their ambition, they don't stray from being leaders who are not just admired for the vision and relentless pursuit, but also for how they are building an ecosystem of believers who consistently push the boundaries. They allow principles to take precedence over ad hocism. For them, profitability is as important as scale, creating and leading new categories and innovations. In each episode, I speak to one such leader, talking to her or him or them about their businesses, lives, aspirations, interests, challenges, pivot moments and turning points, successes, failures, agonies, ecstasies, and of course, frustrations. It is as much about their personal life stories as about their entrepreneurial journeys. Unusual Suspects streams on earshot.in, spotify.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, moneycontrol.com, and a host of other podcast streaming platforms. For this episode, I'm delighted to have Sandeep Sinha, co-founder and managing partner of Loomis. He's an operator investor with a clear focus on build-buy-invest approach to deliver market-leading returns along with building purposeful businesses. Sandeep is committed to the world of education and work, backing innovative business models, disrupting the world of education and learning, work and livelihood, inner wellness, and overall development of human potential to live a fulfilled one. He also is a wine aficionado, particularly those from California, and loves to tune into Kishore Kumar and similar genre of old Hindi film songs. Welcome to Unusual Suspects, Sandeep.
Hi, Gaurav. Thank you for giving me a chance to be on this session. Pleasure to meet you.
You know, Sandeep, you have been an active investor for the last 1.5 decades. Can you break down your investment philosophy for us? How do you go about making investment decisions?
So just to give you a quick background, Loomis and the entire team at Loomis, we are fundamentally operating guys by background. And for us, being operatively involved in any business or any sector is significantly important, which is the reason we have chosen a few select domains where we are attempting to solve a few problems. And for us, investment is a way or means of participating in the journey of an entrepreneur in terms of solving those problems. So whichever segment we pick, we get fairly hands-on involved, driving specific initiatives along with the founders. And we make sure that we understand the space inside out. We make sure that we know the domain really, really well. And we make sure that we have a network connects and knowledge to be able to bring to the table, to be able to add genuine value in terms of the creation of value into the business.
Right. And over the last decade, you worked hands-on with some of your portfolio companies, including PeopleStrong, WeBox, Shiro's, TalentEdge, Orwin, and UniLodgers, among others. In many ways, your involvement means you help run and scale these companies too. How different is it from being a founder, as you were both an insider and an outsider? How do you maintain an arm's length?
So very, very different, Gaurav. I think the founder's role is core to building a company. At no point in time, we create any confusion or ambiguity whatsoever that we have any aspect of being a co-founder or in some shape or form be there as a founder replacement. We are there to basically provide the support and the backing for a founder with respect to the select few elements, whether it is a go-to-market in terms of opening up of the network, whether it is in terms of technology intervention where we can support a founder in terms of some of the resources that we have, whether it is some commercial insights that we can provide. But overall, I would say we are there to back and support the founder. At no point in time, we create any ambiguity whatsoever in terms of being there as a replacement or a co-founder capacity.
You have been leading the charge in building debt-based solutions to support entrepreneurs, allowing them to scale their business with alternate sources of capital, debt versus equity. which side are scales tilted as of now, given the current funding winter, as also the emerging global banking crisis? What's your view, Sandeep?
I think the world is changing very fast, Gaurav, and especially I would say in the matter of the last couple of weeks, we have seen very, very significant shift. The impact of the interest rates going up wasn't fully understood by most globally, and the interventions it can cause into the system. So I think we are all waking up to a very different overall economic and financial environment. At this point in time, I think the concept of funding winter is correct. I don't think there is as much liquidity available in the industry as it was there last year. If you look at the overall numbers of investment itself, there is a significant decrease from last year up till now. So a lot of founders who are not keen on diluting equity at a time where valuations are at stress are actually looking for debt-based solutions to be able to move forward. And I think most of the intelligent entrepreneurs are calibrating the percentage shift between how much equity they want to raise and how much debt they want to raise. And at a time like this, I would say debt becomes far more relevant than ever before.
Absolutely. And, you know, this becomes very relevant because we witnessed a big boom in terms of funding and multiple unicorns emerged in the last 1 year or so, particularly in India. Where do you think this is headed? Because I asked this question in the context of the funding winter, which has been extremely long, and we are heading into the summers. So probably the funding winter is going to go into the next winter too. What lies next for startups as well as investors, given the current climate?
I think if you look at it from a distance, I think India has had a tremendous, tremendous growth story over the last few years. I think the year before, we saw the highest number of unicorns being created in India. And I don't think that's a flash in a pan. And I think that story is here to stay. I think the overall story about India is exceptionally strong and will continue to be strong. You know, we are looking at large and growing markets all across with a population of 1.3 billion and above. You know, we're looking at favorable demographics where the average age of an individual is about 28, 29 years. We're looking at a rapidly growing middle class, right? 600 million people expected to be in that segment by 2030. We're looking at really, really hungry entrepreneurs who are driving a very different culture in terms of a growth mindset coming in. And finally, you know, a fairly positive government policy. When you look at all these things, I think the environment is ripe for Indian entrepreneurial ecosystem to continue to grow and scale immensely. I don't think that's going to be a challenge. Right, in terms of the number of unicorns, you know, it'll probably be high or low. It will go through its own highs and lows over a period of time. I think the investment is going to be tight for a few months of time, but my belief in the fundamental story of India remains strong.
Absolutely. You know, investing in startups as an asset class in itself is something that has multiple facets to it. And you seem to be one of the leading voices in that space. Because venture funding is the fountain that is essential for creating a flourishing startup ecosystem in any country. Startup investment requires a very different approach to the risk-reward matrix as compared to conventional investment. How do you see this playing out in India?
I think the startup entrepreneurial ecosystem is strong and will continue to be strong. But I think we have to all really see how the interest rate shift is going to play out in the industry. I think overall, everybody has seen that over the last 40 years, interest rates have been going down, which has made the capital cheap and easily accessible, relatively speaking. The moment that capital gets dearer and the interest rates start going up, it significantly begins to alter how we look at the investment strategy across the board. You know, and that's something that we'll all have to watch quite closely, because the fundamental ways in which a private equity or a venture capital makes returns is going to shift. And that shift is something that will make a big difference in the industry overall.
And how has the investment landscape itself evolved over the decades? What needs to change today? If you were given a choice of changing a few things, what would those be?
I think if you look at the whole investment ecosystem, primarily driven by PEs and VCs, there are six key strategies that our CIO, David Wilton, always talks about. You know, he talks about leverage. He talks about multiple expansion. He talks about cash extraction, organic growth, inorganic growth, and efficiency gains. A lot of these factors begin to change in this new environment. You know, we're looking at a very higher discount factors for future earnings, which will result into the lower equity valuations, and that will impact the strategy for all the investments going forward. In cases of large transactions, you know, whether you're talking about a private equity buyouts and things like that, you know, there will be a choice between lower margins and a lower debt equity ratio, which will reduce the ability to extract cash from the companies. If you're looking at some of the entrepreneurial ecosystem early stage companies, the focus on profitability or the path towards profitability will become far more important today than it has been ever before. So I think the strength remains there, but we have to be watchful of some of the new dynamics which will come into the play because of, you know, the changing trends globally.
That's right. And, you know, in countries like the US, retail investors have an opportunity to invest in private equity. Do you think the Indian market is ripe for it? And can Indian funds come to take advantage of the corrected valuations?
I think that's a huge opportunity. And if you look overall, venture capital and private equity as an asset class has delivered a very significant return overall globally. If you seriously look from a listed market perspective, the private markets, especially the funds which operate in the top quartile, have delivered almost about 600 basis points ahead of the listed markets over the last few years. This option is available to just a handful of investors as you look at it today. While the large scale investors, the ultra HNIs, the corporates have almost about 20% of their capital in the private market space, a retail investor has less than 2% or 5% of their investments in this segment. And because of that, they miss out on this opportunity, which is, I think, a significant possibility for private equity and venture capital world to be available to the retail investors, obviously the accredited ones, to be able to fundamentally shift the return equation for their portfolio. When you look at managing the risk versus return award equation, you have to have certain of this asset class into your portfolio to be able to manage the overall profile that you want.
And, you know, as someone who has been tracking the investment space for who knows the investment space like the back of his palm, if I were to seek an advice from you, what proportion of money should I as a retail investor invest in private equity? Do public equity and private equity follow similar trends in terms of upsides and downsides? Are there different things to track, different metrics to track, and do the sentiments work differently?
I think the primary difference why people would pursue private markets is in some sense to create diversification. And diversification from listed market, because if you see across the board, bulk of the capital for all the investors are capped into the listed space. Now, private markets offer a very different upside possibility, but they obviously come with a different risk profile. So depending upon at what stage of investment you are, what's the kind of a portfolio you want, the variance could be anywhere between 5% to 20%. And in this segment is where the significant opportunity is for people to kind of pick the assets. The thing to keep in mind is, unlike listed market, the mutual funds that you typically invest in, the variance in the performance of the PEVC asset class is significantly high depending upon which particular firm that you go with. So you have to just be careful enough to be able to make sure that, you know, you're picking the funds which are in the top quartile so as to be able to have a relatively predictable performance versus something that you don't really know about.
Absolutely. And, you know, what sort of potential does the private investment hold in terms of the risk reward metrics is very different. The rewards are high, but the rewards are very high, but the risks are also very, very, very high. And as a culture, we are risk averse. What is the potential given? I'm asking about the potential of private investment in India because of the risk profile.
I think the India private equity and venture capital industry has matured significantly, I would say, over the last decade. You have a bunch of the funds which have been delivering predictable performance on a vintage by vintage basis. There are enough funds in the market right now which have delivered north of about 25% IRR. And I think it's an opportunity to be able to kind of participate in the journey of these funds, which allows you a risk-calibrated return approach, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, we are talking about the funds which have done 3 rounds, 4 rounds, 5 rounds of predictable performance. This is where you need to go for. And I think that's where the challenge is, because the access to information, understanding which funds have operated like what, understanding which funds are raising right now, and then finally able to reach out to those funds is a big challenge. And I think that's the huge, huge, huge opportunity that lies in the world of private markets.
You know, Sandeep, India has rapidly emerged as the world's unicorn capital, and the data bears this out. That said, however, it is not seen as an innovation hub. Is this a cultural thing? Is this because for too long, India was not developed the right culture for rewarding innovation, lateral thinking and excellence? What's your view?
So if you go back, to the whole entire business ecosystem in India, right? I mean, we all have seen the growth from low-cost manufacturing to a large service-based organizations, the development of technology services, and so on and on. I think the model is changing. We are seeing far more disruptive companies on the horizon now than ever before. We are seeing a very different level of disruption than what I would have seen maybe like 3 years or 5 years ago. But I think the shift has to really come at our education, research, and development level. I don't think our education system today truly rewards a different approach to thinking. I don't think we have as much of a creative approach towards problem solving. I don't think we are deep enough in terms of research and development with our universities and our academic institutions to bring about the disruption. Now, are we seeing the new organizations kind of jump up and kind of create those opportunities? The answer is yes. But I still think we have a long way to go. I think it's the hungry entrepreneurs who are fundamentally shifting the game on innovation, but a lot of it is being done in a lateral manner. I think if we want to see an institutional growth of innovation, disruption, I believe it's going to be a longer cycle where the fundamental changes in our education approach will bring forward a headset, which will encourage innovation, which will reward innovation, which will reward creativity. But I see that happening right now. I just think that the pace needs to be a little bit faster than where we are right now.
Yeah, finally, Sandeep, you know, the global banking world is bracing for its worst crisis in more than a decade. It could probably, if the portents are ominous, look very ominous, and it could probably go down, become more worse than the 2008 global financial crisis. One hopes it does not. First, my first question to you is, is this a regulatory failure? And second, what implications does it have for the Indian startup community?
I think a big shift, Gaurav. In less than 2 weeks, 3 US banks, Silvergate, SVB, Signature Bank, and a big global lender like Credit Suisse have collapsed, right? Obviously, there are fears for a full-blown financial crisis, which is looming right now. I personally don't think the repercussions are going to be as threatening as most people are assuming it to be. I believe Silicon Valley Bank had more to do with not being able to plan the returns that they were expecting from long-term government bonds with respect to the interest rates that were paying to their depositors. I think there was a concentration risk because even though there were so many different accounts, they were controlled by a few bunch of VCP organizations. So the other side, we are talking about some of the crypto challenges. But I personally think that as we move forward, the organizations are far more better capable of handling these risks, especially when it comes to the environment in India. While there is a strong belief that any country, single country's economic environment cannot be too isolated from those globally, I don't think we are seeing those challenges in India right now. I don't think those fears are translating to India right now. And I personally believe that, the depth of the demand in India, the opportunity of growth in India will kind of handle all of this with a very different stride altogether. So I remain optimistic and I remain positive that while we will have short-term challenges, I think we see it coming out of it in a very, hopefully in a very defined time frame.
You know, Sandeep, you talked about the challenges and also the bottlenecks and the barriers that exist for the startup community, not just in India, but globally as well. But every problem will need to have a solution matrix. And who do you think can come up with the solutions? What are the kind of solutions that you think? And do you think that a platform like Oyster is actually going to be the right solution matrix provider here?
I personally believe the opportunity is tremendous. Like we talked about, private investments is a significant opportunity for a lot of people to consider. But there has been no real access so far. So our attempt at Oyster is a premier investment platform that unlocks access to world's most desirable VC and PE funds that have been curated or cultivated in a very deep, thoughtful manner. You know, Gaurav, private markets have always been historically privy to a select few. The mission at Oyster is to make this high return yielding asset class accessible to investors across India. With minimum investments starting at almost like a crore, but for accredited investors, you know, it's more flexible. Oyster is designed for high net worth individuals who want to make a significant impact on their portfolios. We actually take significant pride in the fact that we are bringing institutional-grade due diligence and we are curating these funds which are built for success. Our fundamental tagline is that if it's an Oyster, it's a pearl. And while we solve for access and lower entry barriers, our tech-first DNA has enabled us to make investing far more effortless and simple by eliminating the entire paperwork and administrative hassles. And, you know, the fundamental strength of the platform is the seasoned leaders who have come together with decades of investing experience across various geographies, you know, various funds, different institutions, to be able to bring in a thought process that truly offers well-curated, risk-calibrated private investing opportunities to individuals out there.
Thank you, Sandeep, for these very deep insights and taking the time out and to share those perspectives with us, taking the time out to drop by to have this conversation with us on Unusual Suspects, and also signaling a note of optimism for the beleaguered Indian startup community. If they want something, is a hope and optimism, and something coming from this, from a person like you, actually will signal the right chord for them. Thank you so much, Sandeep.
Thanks, Gaurav.